as maybe you remember in terms of timing. Should I stop or? Okay. In February 2010, the SEC commissioners had issued a statement that they are committed to a single set of global standards and that IFRS is best placed to undertake that role, and that includes also in the U.S. And they have further asked the staff of the SEC to perform more studies to inform the commissioners how to actually proceed, and what are the main considerations that the commissioners should take when taking this decision, if and when to take this decision on board. The SEC staff, the Office of the Chief Accountant, conducted that work. That work culminated after 2 years of analysis in 13th of July this year. The SEC has issued a final staff report. It was a staff paper reported to the commission of the SEC, basically designed to assist the commissioners, but the document that was published had ended up without any sort of clear recommendation and also without any clear articulation of any next steps that should be taken in the process. Following the publication of this report, our trustees announced that they commit themselves to carefully study and consider the observations made by the SEC, and they've asked the staff to analyze that study against three criteria. First of all, the IFRS Foundation staff should evaluate the research within the international context. So that was a very important parameter in our work. We tried to give to any point that was raised in the analysis, the SEC analysis, we tried to give the international perspective. In essence, if there was any sort of challenge, how was this challenge addressed by other countries that have undergone the adoption process? We were asked by the trustees to support any sort of observation we have with information and with any sort of evidence, and that included as well academic research, and our staff analysis is accompanied by an academic study, which basically is a literature coverage of what's the most updated research on IFRS adoption and the benefits or the contribution of IFRS adoption to economy, to countries, and to capital markets around the world. And the staff was also asked to identify any sorts of opportunities that can the IFRS Foundation and the ISB can undertake in order to support adopting countries, including the U.S. We presented our analysis to the trustees in the last meeting in October, and after that, our trustees have decided that our analysis might be interesting to the entire community, the constituents around the world, and the analysis was published in October 23rd. The analysis is basically grouped. I mean, we try to group our findings or our observations in four main categories. The ISB is a global accounting standard setter, so that part actually addressed all the issues that were raised regarding whether we are well placed to play that role in terms of governance, in terms of due process, in terms of our funding, in terms of our financial stability and our accountability. The second theme was whether IFRS can be serving as a set of global accounting standards. The third was issues of transition. In essence, what are the transition methods around the world to adopt IFRS, and what are the options? And in that context, we try to address some of the possibilities or alternatives raised by the SEC staff. And the last part was any other challenges in the transition to IFRS that covered regulatory issues, tax issues, cost issues, and others, and within any each of these themes, what we try to do is provide any sort of recommendation or findings on our behalf with relevant data from around the world. I think these are the highlights of what we focused on. I understand that maybe for this group, the second theme would be more relevant, which is the whether I4S are actually relevant or can serve as a candidate for becoming the global accounting standard, the single set of global accounting standards. And maybe, Alan, you want to provide some more perspective on that, but I'm happy to answer any questions on all the others. I can tell you that this is addressing the whole subject is the SEC, our analysis. I don't think can be read without the SEC staff report, which is 140 pages, and ours is 80 pages long. So it's a long two documents. But we can try to provide you with any sort of information from it, and also for next steps. I'll just say before I hand it to Alan that there were some questions asked regarding the timing of the publication of this report, because it was very clear to us that the SEC is in transition, politically speaking, but still I think the trustees felt that it is very important that we address the questions that raised, that the discourse in the U.S. will be based on evidence both from the SEC and from whatever input that we can provide. And I think many people, at least so far, have said to us that our input and our factual input and other input was quite helpful to understand the issues. So despite of the fact that we do understand that, politically speaking, the SEC is unable, perhaps in the very near future, to make a decision, I think our document certainly will help in the long run to any administration, the old one, the new one, to make an informed decision on this subject.
So just a little bit of background as well. The SEC report, if you read through it, it's an interesting report because it actually doesn't give very many opinions from either the SEC staff at all. It certainly is not a statement by the SEC itself. And if you go back to us, for example, it would be like saying, is this a statement by the board of the ISB where they've all signed up to it? And the SEC's case is nothing. It's like that. It's not an official statement by the SEC at all. And most of the document is actually just the SEC staff documenting what others told them in terms of receiving correspondence and information. One of the very few places they actually make a recommendation is on post-implementation reviews, on a narrow, what might be an important issue for you in terms of who should undertake the post-implementation reviews. But virtually everything else is just simply saying, respondent said this, respondent said that. So it's kind of a very strange document in itself, because I think we probably as staff go further normally to make recommendations. And that was the context we actually sort of approached doing our analysis as well. As Yael has mentioned, there are some areas I'll just touch on very quickly about funding stability and things like that they touched on that we made sure that we responded to. It was a little bit difficult in some cases because we think that they mischaracterized the way that we are funded, and it's and actually trying to correct that information without looking as if in a very positive way is quite difficult at times. But we tried to paint a picture that we've got a much broader spread of funding coming from around the world than perhaps was implied by the report. And if anything, the one place where we haven't got adequate funding is actually the US itself, and the SEC is part of that solution. They do have a difficulty, by the way, of funding private organisations. And that's one of the hurdles that they have to get over. There are things that they could do, but it is an inherent difficulty. As Yael mentioned, I'm assuming that to interest to you is more the issue of, is I4S good enough? You know, if we hold up the book as saying, is this a good set of standards? Is it good enough for US purposes? And secondly, was how do you actually get into that set of standards into your own jurisdiction, like the US, for example? In terms of the standards itself, again...
Just on funding, if I may just throw in something. It's something I've raised here before. I mean, many of us have US listing. We do as an organization. We are, in order to maintain our listing, we actually have to pay, in our case, it's the best part of $100,000 to the FASB. We have to. they don't support us. We, you know, it would be great if you know, we don't feel we're getting much value out of that since we don't really use FASB standards. And just to be provocative, why don't you ask the FASB for those dual-listed companies to share some of their funding with you?
Can I just comment, just real quick?
Because, because of course your challenge is you don't have any way of getting enforcement from any stock exchange to be funded, whereas the Americans do. We even wrote a letter to the FASB and they didn't respond, saying why do we, and we also have to pay the PCAOB, why do we have to support these US institutions? We would support you in the plea that some of that funding goes back to you.
Just comment, and I have other questions or comments I'd like to talk about when we conclude. I see you're responding to the SEC's funding. I personally believe the funding issue will take care of itself, and we as professionals can rise above who's doing what funding. And first of all, that is a law in the United States under Sarbanes-Oxley to fund the PCAOB, and part of those funds come out of to the FASB. They can do nothing about that. That's a legal requirement in the United States, and they can't. It's part
of. Well, you say they can't do anything about it. It's a question of lobbying and changing the politics. But,
And then, secondly, I find this back and forth of funding a little troublesome and maybe getting too much attention. And so, as you corrected, the FASB had some issues. But I personally think if you did this, the Big Four's contributions are all counted as one. And I know that you counted the Europeans' contribution to go down to individual companies to reject the SEC's argument. But I think majority of the Big Four's funds probably come out of the U.S., and there's some way to carve those up, maybe on turnover. So I think this back and forth about funding, I'd like to see us as professionals maybe rise above it a little bit and get to the real issue. But I take exception to the way that falling into that trap and not rising above it, of the way this paper identifies funding. And I think it would be proper to take some of the Big Four's contributions and count that as some as U.S., but it's not. You need to rise above it.
Okay. Perhaps if I focus on the standards themselves then, the report was very careful, I think, because it simply notes that there's a difference between IFRS and US GAAP. Although it doesn't say it explicitly, I think it's quite implicit in there that they perceive them as being, I use the term comprehensive, and I don't want to be misconstrued as saying it's complete, but both US GAAP and IFRS are both quite mature portfolios of standards. And they don't say that one is better than the other. In fact, and they identify differences between them in the report, and again, they're very neutral about this and don't say that one particular solution is better than the other, but they do document where there are major differences in there. So one of the interesting things in writing our response as well is that a lot of the debate is often between principles versus rules. But again, the report's quite neutral about that, and they've acknowledged from the very beginning, going back to Sarbanes-Oxley in 2002 with a report, and continued that with the Posen report, where they've actually said they want to keep moving more towards principle-based standards, and they've acknowledged that some of the steps that they've made in there as well. So we didn't want to get dragged into a debate about better or worse in terms of principles and rules, because they acknowledge that principles is the right way to go. The issue they have is more about enforceability, because they, in particular, they say to have good principles, you then need to have, it's not a direct quote from here, but an adequate amount of application guidance to ensure that the principles can be enforced in a consistent manner and interpreted in a consistent manner as well. And they question whether or not we've got enough depth in terms of the guidance. I think if you talk to the SEC staff as well, they think we've quoted, I think, from one of the speeches, that they think US GAAP's gone too far and we perhaps have not gone far enough. And so we acknowledge in there, I think, some of the other work we've done independently on it, the Interpretations Committee, that we do have to provide a little bit more help, both in education, also in interpretations, to make sure that we get consistent application. So that was a relatively big piece of that. Related to that is the enforcement of standards, and the SEC's very strong area in here is saying the standards are not being enforced in a consistent manner. And what we tried to do in here was separate those issues of enforceability, where we control that, versus enforcement, which is where the SEC itself it could have a much stronger role to play in there as well. Because we have this theme that we keep pushing that you can't get consistent application unless you start with the same from the same place, which is a set of common standards. And so we've documented quite a few things there. And just to round it off, so that we can open up and answer questions you are particularly interested in. If you've got the set of standards, how do you get there? And the one thing that is unfortunately absent from their report is discussion of IFRS 1, first-time adoption. They talk about the sort of the convergence steps of getting closer and closer, but it's completely silent on what they would do on first-time adoption, whether, in fact, they want a first-time adoption approach. And some of the barriers that they identify in there, in particular, are references to US GAAP, for example. And as Yael said, a lot of their report is actually giving experiences from around the world where people have had very similar issues and how they've dealt with that. South Africa, for example, just points to us and says whatever we produce becomes their requirement. Australia still refers to Australian accounting standards in their law. And they've just basically taken IFRSs and plugged them underneath. So there's no need, for example, for the US to change any references to US GAAP. You can do that, but what you do is you change, the codification would be unplugged and you'd put in the IFRSs in its place, for example. So we've tried on it as positively as we can to give lots of examples where people have had the same sort of experience. They're the same challenges, whether China, India, Japan, all got the same sorts of issues they have to face. How you can actually deal with those and essentially adopt if you choose to.
And just one more point on Alan's point on first-time adoption. There was one place where we were quite articulated our own position, which was on the issue of gradual transition, because the report, the SEC report, does mention the need for a gradual transition, but it was unclear to us what does it exactly mean, a gradual transition? Does it mean giving more time for the adoption process, or does it mean a standard-by-standard approach, which was mentioned indirectly by some of the commentators, and it wasn't clear to us whether the SEC staff supports that that approach or not. And we gave our clear position that a standard-by-standard approach is actually impractical, almost impossible to actually execute, has a lot of disadvantages, and that has been considered and rejected by a lot of other countries around the world. So on that, we were very clear. So we said on gradual approach, we do support, for example, the Japanese option to give a voluntary option as a gradual temporary phase, or to have a mandatory requirement for a certain group of companies, the multinationals, and define them in a way that can actually bring a transitional phase in a mandatory approach. But in any case, the standard-by-standard proposal, in our perspective and from the experience we have witnessed around the world, will not work. So that was a very clear message in our analysis.
Should we open for any questions, thoughts?
I think Bob put his hand up before me.
Okay, go ahead.
I've read both documents. There's nothing quite like two opposing arguments, if you want to characterize it that way, for an interesting read. But it's very difficult, and I'm hoping that there is a dialogue continuing with the SEC. I know it's not an easy thing for you to answer. And I'm not looking for that, but it's important that I believe that dialogue continues with the SEC behind the scenes rather than the fairly public documents that have gone out. I read the SEC document as a series of arguments or reasons not to adopt IFRS. I take Alan's point that it didn't make opinions, but it's difficult to read it in any other way given the history. I read your document as a way of demonstrating reasons to adopt IFRS. In the end, I think it's incumbent upon the ISB to find a balance between keeping the dialogue open without wasting time maintaining that dialogue. The ISB and the FASB have worked very closely together over the last few years, quite rightly, on the convergence agenda. We got to a certain place, the convergence agenda was put to one side. You now have a chance for the ISB to move forward without looking fully over your shoulder at the SEC and the FASB. I know it's difficult not to do that, and you will inevitably have to do that, but this is a chance to move on. The dialogue should be kept open. Don't waste huge amounts of time on it, and I think that may be a better way of eventually evolving to one set of global standards.
If I can respond to that, I completely agree with you, and I think it matches our strategy now, because one other very important document that went out last week, I think, is the Accounting Standards Advisory Forum proposal for public consultation, and in that document we actually proposed to structure differently the way we work with national standard setters around the world. We propose to basically replace our bilateral, our key bilateral relationships in a multilateral collective discussion with national standard setters. And in this new mechanism of our work, FASB will have a voice, an important voice in our consultation process, but one voice in a group of national standard setters. At this point, we propose to have 12 representatives on that group, and I hope we can stick to that number and not increase it. That depends on the consultation we get. But I think we are looking at the U.S. and the FASB as a very, very important voice and a very important input in our process, but it's not the only one. And that will manifest itself, I think, in this new forum.
Bob?
I thought it was a very well-written paper, question and a follow-up comment to that question. Talking about standard-by-standard approach, the paper points out that other jurisdictions have a more incremental approach, aligned with IFRS on an issue-by-issue basis. And then later on, as you know, it talks about standard by standard approach. Question, I do have a comment. What's the difference between an issue by issue basis approach versus a standard by standard basis approach?
Good question. Page 49. This is when you find out who wrote which bits and pieces. So Canadian was issue by issue. Probably not a lot of difference. I think it may be the way that they characterized it themselves. And the Canadians, so which one did we say, standard by standard, sorry?
UK.
I don't think there's a lot of difference between the two. It's whether it's almost like a financial reporting problem that you try to solve, or whether you call that a new standard. I think it's tended to mean the same thing.
Okay, I just... I think it might be a very important point, because in that paragraph, not getting down to too much detail, it says other jurisdictions have taken a more incremental approach by changing the domestic requirements to move closely aligned with IFRS on an issue-by-issue basis before making a decision to fully adopt IFRS. Mm-hmm. This convergence approach spreads the reporting changes over a long period of time but reduces the size of the final step.
Yeah.
And there's a different tone when you switch over to standards by standards. The paper takes on a totally different tone. Referencing the quote from the ICAEW and how difficult it would be, and I believe in even comments now, is perceived almost impossible. And I didn't want to derail into the difference of those two, but if they didn't mean the same thing, the flavor of the comments about them seemed. But the reason that it's such a big issue is, it seems in my reading, and this is my personal comment, that there seems to be, and I don't use bias pejoratively, but just the way I see the paper written, as a strong bias against what supposedly is called a standard-by-standard approach, which I think, in my mind, correct me if I'm wrong, is a condorcement approach, and a very strong stance against that. Was that intentional, I guess, is my question? And if it was, just want to add my point of view on that, and that many of the companies that respond to the SEC paper, including my own, that are pro for moving to international accounting standards and trying to change the turn, tide in the U.S., actually supported what was called a endorsement approach. And this would be just giving you my opinion to the paper, but when we see this type of wording, you actually disenfranchise us. And although you didn't mean it, it comes across to certain readers that it's a big bang approach or nothing. And I just want to convey to you that that is the way that me and some of my peers are reading this, and it's not coming over as a good message, in my opinion.
If I can just respond to that, the this was a difficult, these sections were difficult to write because, as I said, it's the IFRS 1 discussion that's missing from the US document itself, in that I think we've seen, as it mentions in our response, the MOU we had with the FASB was a way of us getting closer and closer. And we've always seen as a presumption in here that if you're going to have one set of standards, and the test of whether you've got one set of standards is whether you can assert compliance with this one set, which we have presumed to be IFRS. And if you have the endorsement approach, which was described, would never get you there, in a sense, because you're always getting one by one, you'd get there, but you'd never take the remaining, the underlying set of standards, you'd never incorporate them into US GAAP, because you'd only be doing new standards at a time. And so we've always seen it as being, as these bilateral agreements and the standard by standard or issue by issue, is making that little step to IFRS, from big to small, and that's why that was, in fact, I think the purpose of the whole MOU, take these really major projects, get us to work with the FASB, get really close, and then they can take that final step together. And one of our concerns is that we, almost by definition, we're the closest we've ever been, we can only from now on almost start to drift apart, because with the endorsement process, they either take the standard or they don't, or they start to adjust it. So, yeah, I think it was deliberate that it's not so much a big bang versus an incremental, but it's you need to go through that gateway IFRS 1, and we're concerned that a endorsement approach wouldn't take you there. And it's at the heart of global standards, because it's either one set or it's too similar but not quite the same. And our experience with the financial sector in particular is not particularly good reading in terms of having slightly different standards. You get some quite big
Bob, just a question from my side. When you propose the supporting that, I'm just trying to understand, was IFRS one part of your thought process in that thought process of what you...
Eventually, down the road, it would have to be addressed, and I think the SEC report had indicated that they believe under the endorsement approach, as they labeled it, that after a certain amount of time, you'd be in compliance with IFRS. The problem, as you indicated, is they didn't specifically say, well, what about IFRS 1? As we know, IFRS 1 has changed over time, and I don't know if I should use the right word, accommodate certain situations. Let me just give you my experience. I don't know if it's helpful or not. At our company, we went through a very big project of looking at going to IFRS. We couldn't, but we looked at it. And actually, before I started that project, I was actually a big proponent of the company going to IFRS. When we got into our daily meetings, we had like 4-hour meetings every day. What the problem, in my opinion, others can disagree, in the U.S. is we've grown up and been educated and have a system where we parse over every word and take some kind of meaning out of every word. And I'm not saying that others don't do that, but I think we in the U.S. may take it to an extreme. And if you go through every word and take a literal reading of it, there are significant changes between U.S. GAAP and IFRS. My favorite one is with software capitalization. And in the U.S., we have a word term, technological feasibility. In IFRS, there's a word called technical feasibility. So you could say, how can there be a difference between the word technologically feasible and technical feasibility? Well, the details in explaining those words, and that it would have probably been a big impact to us. And so why we say that the FASB has come close, the US GAAP has come close to IFRS, I believe there's scores of those item, other ones. And I know it was told in here that there said in here that there was a joint project on stock-based compensation. What was not mentioned, and very not probably not appropriate to be mentioned in this document, is there's significant changes in the actual outcome of stock-based compensation under U.S. GAAP and IFRS,
yes.
One being the great investing issue, and the other being the tax issue, income tax issue.
Yep.
Those are huge differences. And so I got convinced in that a Big Bang approach would be just unduly costly and occur in the U.S. market, and why I became in favor of the endorsement process. And now I think I've been rambling so much, I actually forgot your question, but hopefully I answered it.
To some extent, yes. That's okay. But Malcolm, you want to say something?
Just a few points. I mean, firstly, it's amazing that you managed to respond between July and October. It took the SEC many months, and they kept on telling us the proposal was coming and coming. So congratulations to you in producing the response so quickly. Having said that, you know, I think I saw somewhere Hans Hugerberg's comment that he, some sort of expression of frustration at the slow movement of developing standards. I mean, I think many of us in the preparers community perhaps feel you've been too focused on getting alignment with US GAAP, and that's perhaps hindered you in moving forward. As, you know, part of that most likely contributed to the frustration. So perhaps one point I'd like your views on is that, do you have a way forward now that we are where we are with the US? Are you going to put that a little bit behind you and now concentrate on your own agenda and try to accelerate and think about other parts of the world? Although having said about thinking about other parts of the world, we just heard in our pre-session that you're not going to get Japan to fully follow IFRS unless most likely they're following the US as well, because they seem to be looking over the shoulders at both sides of the world. And then the another point that perhaps you can take into account in your comments is, whilst we as, you know, a dual listed company, we clearly, you know, welcome the fact that we don't any longer have to do the bridge. So obviously we're happy about that. I mean, the worst thing would be for us if the US, if you start to go different ways between US GAAP and IFRS, if there would be a tendency in the US to reintroduce some sort of reconciling bridge. So perhaps a few comments. First on speed. Are you now more committed to speed up resolving some of the things without always looking over the shoulder at US GAAP? Are they following you? Secondly, how do you think, as a board, you want to react to other parts of the world, not just the US? You know, and thirdly, is there a danger that if we do go your own way from US GAAP, that might be that the US would want some reconciliation?
Three simple questions. and if I can sort of morph this a little bit into our work plan discussion as well, because you asked about where we're heading. I think the speed without the FASB looking over our shoulder at the FASB, I think that relates primarily to the MOU projects and to insurance. We are very conscious of the fact that the G20 would like us to end up with common solutions to financial instruments, and that's at the top of our minds on that. At the same time, we've got to get these things done. We're looking at solutions for impairment. You see classification and measurement, I think, I've just seen the ballot drafts for that, and our impairment model, for example. We would ideally like to get the right solution. If we could at least get a reconcilable solution, that would be making progress as well. So we're conscious of that. In terms of leases and revenue, revenue we're holding together. Pretty much we rely on virtually every decision in revenue. There's no sign that we won't get a converged solution there. Leases, I think, is holding together as well. We've actually got a converged solution on that. Insurance, we'll probably have different outcomes, but we're going out with an exposure draft on that probably in this late towards the end of the first half of next year. So they are MOU projects, they are joint projects, and it's, you know, the point is the the more you can get a converged solution, the better it is globally. So we're working as hard as we can to get that together. In our own projects, the other thing that we've been doing is we've decided we're laying out our future program, and that's it's spelled out in the work plan, which I think you have, in terms of there are a couple of things that we're doing relatively quickly. We're looking at agriculture. There's a small thing with bearer assets, and that, to your point about other constituencies, that's something particularly through Southeast Asia has been an issue that's a problem. So we're looking at bearer assets, and we're also looking at the rate-regulated activities. The question, we're going to be putting a discussion paper there, but we've also been asked to see whether we should have an interim solution, some sort of grandfathering that would allow perhaps Canada and the US and others, if they chose to continue their accounting, while we resolve this. On top of that, we've developed, I think we've got 7 or 8 other projects, which I won't go into too much detail on our research agenda. It's quite a wide range of projects. They're not on this work plan yet, but we're over the next 18 months or so going to be rolling those out. We haven't got the resources here to deal with 7 or 8 projects all at once. By ourselves, we'll be drawing on other standard setters and people to help us out with that. That's part of this sort of multilateral relationships we're developing with other standard setters. Importantly, one of the ones, and Peter's in here and could talk perhaps more about that, is a conceptual framework, in that we are developing a discussion paper covering 5 areas: reporting entity, performance including OCI, including OCI, disclosure, measurement, and the elements, the definitions of assets and liabilities. And our target for completing the project is September 2015, with the first milestone being a discussion paper in June of next year. So in terms of speed, there's a lot of work going on that. The disclosure section will be very important. As PK mentioned, we have a disclosure forum in January, at the end of January here in London, to provide us with some input, and the feedback that the sort of work that you provided us with and your feedback is going to be feeding directly into that project as well. And that project originally was a joint one with the FASB. We're now running it as an ISB-only project. We are expecting to use this standard set of forum as our working group to help us. But we're also, we have people from other standard setters involved, basically working as part of the team to make sure we've got a broad base of people.
If I can also respond to the comment made earlier on the public nature of this discourse between us and the SEC, and to address a point that was mentioned by you on the influence sometimes decisions in the US have on other countries. Our feeling was that this report, the SEC staff report, is read not only in the US but around the world. It affects decision making not only in the US, and I think the trustees identified that coming from the countries they came and identifying the impact that report had on other decision makers, and therefore balancing these considerations, the idea was to publicize the report and to help not only the US but any other interested policymakers to understand the IFRS Foundation's perspectives on the issues on the table. So I agree that maybe you would find some points not necessarily exactly proper for an open discussion, but once the discussion was out in the air, and given the very, very high interest everybody has on how we function as an organization in the global environment, it was very important to us to give that input to the entire global community.
Yeah. And because you come from Israel, I mean, I think you use basically US GAAP, is that right? And
no. We are like South Africa. We are the ideal country. We point to the ISB.
Really?
Yeah.
They gave us the key.
You moved from US GAAP, okay.
Yeah. Well, Malcolm, I think you bring up a very difficult question. I can only answer on my own behalf, but though some discussions have given me the reason to think that a lot of board members agree with me when I say that we are left alone now to take our decisions. We will, of course, listen to FASB as we listen to a lot of people. But I think you can expect us to be much more speedy, take decisions and move on, and not always are compromises the right solution for standard setting. And I think we have ran into a lot of compromises when we have been had these endless discussions that we can't finalize. So I think once we have finalized these four projects that will be in common, I expect the board to be more agile and more quickly and more, let's call it, independent from one partner.
As to the other point, Malcolm, that you raised about the equivalence between IFRS and US GAAP and the lack, the absence of reconciliation going both ways from IFRS to US GAAP, and also for the US issuers being listed in Europe. It's not the first time I hear someone raising this point. Do you have any specific indicators or any things in your mind that would point to that decision made in 2007 being withdrawn by the SEC, or is it just a kind of general?
It's a fear, and you know, it's. I mean, can I say I mean, obviously we're dealing here with a lot of tough political questions, and it's. The end of the day, a little bit of a political decision, perhaps. I don't know which. I mean, my view is in the US has been a bit of an impasse before, and now we've got clarity for the next 4 years. Who's driving the country? Hopefully, so perhaps that might have some changes also at the SEC. But there is a concern. There is a concern that if you know that somebody coming in at the SEC would not be favourable.
Yes, but as you are aware, it's a both ways agreement. It's a win-win or lose-lose agreement in a way. A situation. Yeah. If they were to withdraw it, probably there would be some retaliation.
On that issue, though, with my, I have done quite a few international filings. What has been the SEC's biggest reason for not the local GAAP to be filed as it is because it's not a comprehensive body of accounting. Now, with the SEC's report itself does not say anything about the quality about being it. It says both the standards are, I read it, that report, both the reports as if they, both the standards are equal value. I personally see, personally I speak here, I see the chances of SEC going and asking for reconciliation is quite remote. I would not say impossible, but maybe difficult, because you have to get over the threshold that the IFRS is not a comprehensive body of accounting, and that might be a difficult one to get over.
And technically, we are much closer today than we were 6 years ago when they had to make the decision to allow IFRS. So technically, there is no good basis. Maybe it could be only political type of decision.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I agree with what PK said. I think the only time I could see them revisiting that decision is if there were an IFRS registrant that blew up badly and it was perceived that it was the IFRS standard that was the result of the failure of the IFRS registrant. And I think that's a very, very low probability of anything like that happening. But if something like that were to happen, an Enron type situation, and this IFRS standard was blamed as the underlying fault, then they would reconsider. But I think other than that, it's very low.
Bill.
I just wanted to stray on, because we strayed onto the agenda, and this is a very specific question. We have the hedge accounting draft up for comments. Sorry to dray to that, we've only got a couple of minutes. Are you seeking comments on that draft sitting there? I know that in the UK, the 100 group, I've chaired a working panel to look at this particular document. We've identified a couple of things we want to respond to. Hypothetical derivatives on cash flow hedging. I had to say that. And I don't know, if we, are you looking for comments and are you going to respond to them? I just want to know what the status is of the draft.
Gosh, what am I supposed to say? We're not looking for comments, no. But then we can't ignore comments either. We're certainly not looking for any challenge to the technical decisions. This is basically up there as a draft. It gives people a chance to see the wording well in advance of us finalising it. Now, and clearly, though, you know, while I say we're not looking for comments, we'd like to think we've got the drafting right. But clearly, if there's something in there, and it happens all the time, where a little word or something isn't quite, doesn't translate well, or is out of context, or we didn't quite mean that. You know, I shouldn't say, but I know one standard that
10 minutes before we went to print, we noticed that the word "not" was missing in the sentence. The scope. That's a fatal flaw.
No, and we're identifying an issue which we think is inadvertent. It is the extension of hypothetical derivatives to cash flow, hedge accounting effectiveness measurement, and we just want to fire an advert to say, is this what you meant? The FASB has to be very clear in their, very clear that they don't extend it that way. You're not being clear to say you have extended it that way, but that's the way we're reading it. So
certainly, if you've got comments like that, that'd be well received.
Okay, thank you very much.
But don't write and tell us that you don't believe in hedge accounting.
I do, you know I do. It's you not.
Hiroishi.
I have a question regarding the accounting standard forum. When are you going to start that forum, and how often do you have a meeting? I'm concerned if the meeting is held just 3 times or 4 times. Can you get the input from standard setters? Currently, you have a meeting with the FSB almost every month. When are you going to end the bilateral meeting with the FSB?
So our proposal at this point is to start operating in parallel to the convergence project. So it doesn't. We are committed to end the convergence projects to an end, and hopefully by mid next year that's going to happen. But in parallel, and just as Alan just described, we have a full agenda for next year already. So we're trying to combine the two. And we're trying to come up with a model of working with that group that will actually enable a good process of input. So it's 4 times a year meetings. And I think that because the different nature of consultation with that group is different from the convergence projects, where you have to actually agree on every point almost. That needs much more closer relationship, because you're actually working on it on almost a drafting, coming together on wording. Here, what we try to do is work on the issues, on the big picture issues. We don't need as intimate a consultation. However, we did say in the paper, and this is an important principle that we're going to preserve. This is not an exclusive relationship in essence. We are open to any sort of, if needed, any sort of discussion on a bilateral basis. So it doesn't mean that from now on we're not going to talk individually to any member of the group if needed, or that that member cannot address the ISB if needed. So it's basically a model that has to add value to our processes but not add limitations. And hopefully, if it does work well, those bilateral relationships will just not be needed anymore. So I hope that addresses your questions.
Thank you.
Gerard?
Yes, thank you. Alan mentioned the G20 will to converge. It was last week again. It was the same from the FSB, Stability Board. But I would say that we have some concern with this way to proceed, because if we take some illustration coming from the experience, we had the modification of we had IFRS 9 with two models included, and we have changed, or we are in the process to change three model approach, and I must say that a lot of banks in Europe have some concerns on the way to apply effectively these three models, taking into account that they were in agreement or satisfied with the first IFRS 9 on that point. I would like to take another illustration, which is impairment. Mm-hmm. We don't really see how a convergence process can still happen on impairment. The concern is we had a first draft, exposure draft, with a supplementary document. Most banks in Europe were satisfied, even if there were some operational difficulties to implement. Okay, but they were satisfied with those, with the model itself and the conceptual basis of mm-hmm. that model. This model has been given up, maybe because of difficulties of replication, but it was viewed by banks that this give up was coming from the necessity to converge with FISB, and then we had the three-bucket approach. Okay, so we agreed with the three-bucket approach. And now we are told, you need to converge with FISB, and FISB has given up the three-bucket approach. So the real concern is to know, where are we going now? Is it to finally adopt something like what FISB has published during the summertime? And in that case, I can tell you that European banks would not agree with that at all. So convergence is probably a very good thing, but not only on one way.
Yes.
And it should be justified when we change our opinion, and we have changed on impairment twice, and we would not like to change a third time.
Gérard, you just described very well how difficult it is to work with another partner.
That's a bit, but I wanted to tell you our opinion on that.
Yes.
I don't know whether the G20 statement should be read that we should converge with the FASB. I don't see that way personally. I have no background knowledge other than reading the statement. So I think it's they're asking us to get together. It doesn't mean that we will give up what we have. I think we are very clear in the staff has done an outreach after the FASB came out with a tentative model to go back and see, and the staff has presented to last board meeting, I think, and the board meeting prior to that about the feedback we got from our constituents, and there's a big support for the model that we are going. So we need to go through, and I think our current plan as of now is to go with our exposure draft on the three-bucket approach and talk about, we have never spoken about the supplementary document, so we are going to put that in the document. But current plan is that unless something changed in the last 10 days, I'm not aware of it. Bob, do you want to take on? Then we can go to the next issue.
I have one on the work plan. This is probably to Peter. Just get a feel for what will be in the discussion paper on a conceptual framework. I think you said, Peter, you were handling it. And I know that the chairman has come out and indicated that he wants to get this done quickly. I was just curious of what was going to be in this document that's proposed to be out no later than June 30th of next year. It seems like an awfully quick turnaround, in my opinion, for substantial issues like elements, measurement, reporting entity and presentation disclosure. So I'll just give my personal comment that the June 30th, 2013 seems very aggressive, and I'm a little concerned that it is so aggressive, and just curious of what's going to be in the discussion paper.
Yeah, okay, thanks for the question, Bob. I think a couple of things. One is it's a different approach we're trying now from what we had been doing in the previous work on the framework. Previously we had 8 separate phases, and now we're proposing to move it forward in one go. And I think one of the main reasons for that is that people said that they found it very difficult to comment on individual chapters in isolation because they wanted to see how the pieces fitted together. So from that point of view, we thought it's better to try and give people a sense of what the whole document might look like rather than carry on with the piecemeal approach. It is going to be a discussion paper, so it's not going to cover absolutely everything we want to put in the framework. It's not going to be like a sort of first exposure draft, but it will be hitting the high-level questions of what we think should be in those chapters. To give you a quick sketch, and obviously we are still working through this, so of course it's still work in progress. In terms of elements, I'd say that elements, to a large extent, it's tweaking the existing definitions rather than really coming up with starting with a complete fresh sheet of paper and beginning from the beginning. So I think we'll still see asset definitions that are referring to rights or resources. We'll still see a liability definition that talks about obligations. But there'll be some movement in the details supporting that. But I think the sort of broad outline will be quite similar. Although there are some sort of quite difficult questions in there as well. In terms of the reporting entity, we had an exposure draft on that, and we had comments back on that. And I think what we'll have in the discussion paper will largely be a continuation of what was in the ED. There were a couple of areas where people wanted a bit more detail, on things like they wanted more guidance on combined financial statements. But by and large, I think the reporting entity, there's not a huge development on from what was in the ED. Probably the two biggest areas, I think, will be measurements and presentation. On measurements, the issue, to an extent, is do you try and come up with a single measurements approach in all cases, or do you have different horses for different courses? And I think in the previous discussions, the board has been fairly clear that it's not likely to go for a single measurement for all circumstances. So that will be largely, I think, about trying to define is there a menu of options, or what sort of guidance do we give on what measurement to use in different cases, and how does that fit together? And that's also linked, I think, quite closely to the whole question of performance reporting, of course, and measurement isn't just about measurement, but it's about what results do you get in the performance statement or performance statements afterwards. And so I think that will be one of the questions. If you look at the responses to the agenda consultations or a lot of the individual standards, a lot of the respondents have said you keep using OCI, but you haven't defined what it's for, or you haven't addressed recycling, questions like that. So clearly we need to look at those issues, and we need to decide, are we still splitting it into components? Is two components the right number? Is it one statement or two statements? And so that I think will be one of the trickier areas to deal with. Another thing we might want to do on presentation is look at some of the material that was in financial statement presentation. I guess my personal view on that is that we wouldn't necessarily pick that up in a huge amount of detail at this stage for the concepts. And I wouldn't see a lot of points in us just reproducing discussion that's already in IS1. But we still need to evaluate that a bit. In terms of disclosure, I think probably there are two aspects to that. One is there's clearly a link with presentation, because presentation and disclosure go quite closely together. So we obviously need to look at those sort of in the round. And then I think we also, the framework ought to give the board some guidance on how it goes about making disclosure decisions. So I could see it giving some fairly high level probably input on how to do that. There's a separate strand of work on disclosure, which is how to go about rationalising existing disclosures, maybe making them more effective. And as Alan mentioned earlier, we're setting up a disclosure forum, which is planned for January, to talk through some of those issues. I think that's probably not so much a concepts-level discussion, but it's more probably about practical implementation and maybe how we can do a more effective job with the requirements that are already in place, rather than trying to look at changing the requirements or at dealing with the concepts part of it at this stage. Now, I think we you're sort of asking what the discussion paper is going to look like. We're still trying to work that out, because we've got to get the right balance between giving you a clear enough picture of what the package looks like, and not we can't ask 50 questions on the package. I think it's got to be a sensible number of questions. So we've got to find the right way to get the balance between input on individual questions and on the overall shape of the package.
And we have not yet started the discussion on the board level.
We are starting next Wednesday, or Tuesday for that, yeah.
It's a tight schedule.
Jayant, then Malcolm, then we will wrap it up this end of it, and then we will get to the effect analysis.
Yeah, my question was more, I think, relevant to the earlier discussion, that whatever the engagement between FASB and ISB, what we are having, my question was that, are we engaging with the countries like India, the standard setters in India? See, it's a large economy, it's on the verge of adopting IFRS or converging with IFRS. There are many local issues which probably needs to be addressed. So are we engaging with the local standard setters?
Yeah.
I don't see that discussion.
Yeah. Take India, for example, specifically India. Agricultural accounting, for example, has been a big issue, which your company has a lot of tea estates in it. One of the reasons why the agricultural he's been a little bit fast-forwarded is because of the issues that came about in Malaysia and India. Indian standard setter and the Malaysian standard setter led the effort in the Asian Oceania Standard Setters Group to bring the issue, possible solution and all that. So there is a lot of engagement with the standard setters. It may not be seen openly as it is being seen with the FASB, but definitely there are engagements with every country that we talk to. Like there was an issue with Indonesia about the government lands. We dealt with that. Similarly, Malaysia and India had this issue about it. South Korea has this issue about foreign currency, which is part of the Indian issue. And so we are dealing with that issue, for example, which is the AS-11 in India. But I don't know whether the foreign currency is something we will take it up right now. The other issue which is very pertinent in India, for example, is the rate-regulated entities. How do you deal with it? Same issue which is there elsewhere in the world. So the outside the United States, you don't see it that formally being done, but behind the scenes, virtually every standard setter we talk to in India, it has been a big part of the discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Malcolm?
Perhaps this is too technical to get into right at the moment, but you mentioned the conceptual framework you're looking at the reporting entity. And perhaps I have to say I haven't looked for many months now or years at the what's out there in this area, but is the group a reporting entity, or is a group being defined as an aggregation of individual reporting entities? Because obviously when one thinks about foreign exchange impacts, you get different answers if you say the group, say, does all of its transactions in dollars compared to individual legal entities doing their transactions in functional currencies. So is that part of your consideration?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that's one of the things I think that we do need to look at to some extent.
Does the current... have you put out a paper on this, or is it conceptual framework?
Yeah, there was a paper on reporting entities.
Sorry?
There was a chapter which was...
What does it say? There was one, wasn't it?
It's a circumscribed set of factors.
Parental subsidiaries control. That's a concept of consolidation. Although it doesn't exclude some horizontal type of consolidation, which we call combination. It's not excluded, but it's not that way specific.
But my question is a consolidated group a reporting entity? Is the group a reporting entity? Because
Yes. While also acknowledging that subsidiaries can be their own reporting entities if reporting alone, standalone.
Yeah, but you've now put minority interest part of group equity, but does that hang together with the functional currency concept that you build it up?
Well, I think the functional currency concept isn't just about consolidation. I mean, if you had a single legal entity with separate branches, the functional currency concept in IS 21 would still work in the same way. So I'm not sure that's a consolidation question per se.
Okay, well, I look forward to the discussion.
Anything else? Because we are slightly running over, but we deliberately left this discussion to continue because that's a very useful discussion and a very healthy discussion. Therefore, we just let it slide a little bit. But if you don't have anything else, let's jump to the second paper that I will hand it over to Alan and to Lily to talk about it.